Greetings. This is podcast number 16 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. We have two segments today. The first segment is about one of the most absurd claims I've ever heard. Have you ever heard a right-winger claim that if Jesus were around today, he'd be in their camp? That Jesus would be a right-winger? In the second segment, we'll examine how self-described coward Bill O'Reilly is still hiding under his Potemkin Village desk. Let me mention that the most recent podcasts have been crammed full of dates, numbers, locations, statistics. Today, I'll paint with somewhat of a broader stroke. Also, I'll give music credits at the end of the podcast. Let's get started. In this first segment, let's talk a little bit about the question, would Jesus be a liberal, a progressive, or would Jesus be a conservative, a right-winger? Right-wing Christians certainly would not think that Jesus would be a liberal progressive, yet, as with most things, the right-wingers are wrong. Let's take a look at what the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament, and the Catholic Church's social teachings tell us about this issue. An overwhelming concern for the poor and for economic justice permeates the Old Testament. It's pretty much summed up in two passages from Proverbs. The first one is, "He who oppresses a poor man insults his maker." His maker with the capital H and M, in other words, God. He who oppresses a poor man insults God. But he who is kind to the needy honors him. Capital H, him. In other words, God. If you oppress a poor man, you insult God. If you're kind to the needy, you honor God. The other passage would be, "He who closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself cry out and not be heard." Right-wingers all the time close their ear to the cry of the poor. They blame the poor for their own plight. They say we can't afford to help them. They say the plan you offer is no good, but they don't offer anything in its stead. They say we don't need to do anything. Somehow the poor will get by. They close their ear to the cry of the poor. It is, of course, liberals and progressives who are tuned into the cries of the poor and tried to help all of them, not just through private charitable contributions, which are important, but through social justice legislation that can have a broad effect on the entire society and the economic and social structures which cause economic injustice. This is unlike right-wingers who, to the extent they give it all, wind up helping just a select few of the poor because they limit their assistance to private charitable contributions and refuse to support social justice measures that could have a much broader and widespread effect. If I can just put in an aside here, the proverb that says, "He who closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself cry out and not be heard." Can you hear that and not have it brought to mind Loopy Pat Robertson's just saying that the Dover, Pennsylvania town that kicked out of office its pro-intelligent design school board, they better not ask God for help in a natural disaster. Hey, Pat, you twit. The Bible doesn't say God will ignore your cries if you refuse to teach religion in a science class. It says, Pat, that God will ignore your cries if you ignore the cries of the poor. So I guess it's going to be your cries, Pat, that are ignored. Pat, why don't you stick to something more appropriate for your serial killer personality? Plotting to assassinate democratically elected leaders of other countries. Okay, back on point. The Old Testament also has strong commandments for the redistribution of wealth. The Old Testament seeks to ensure that a small group of people cannot aggrandize unto themselves an excessive amount of the society's wealth and income. Every 50 years, there is to be a jubilee year. Slaves are supposed to be released and land returned to its original owners. In fact, every 7 years, debts are supposed to be forgiven among the Israelites. Does this sound like right-wing philosophy to you? A final Old Testament element. God destroyed a society because of its brutal treatment of the poor, and the prophets warned that others would be similarly destroyed if they didn't change their ways and treat the poor properly. With this Old Testament background, it's no surprise that in Matthew 25:31-46, the parable of the sheep and the goats, Jesus proclaims that how you treat the hungry, the thirsty, the sick, and other least of these, in other words, the Old Testament poor, how you treat them is how you treat Jesus himself. Jesus says if you help them, you are helping him, and you will go to heaven. Jesus says, if you do not help them, you are not helping him, and you will go to hell. Does this sound like the Jesus that right-wingers are always telling us about? Then there are the clarion words of Jesus that are repeated in virtually identical fashion in three of the Gospels. It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Such a teaching directly out of the mouth of Jesus does not indicate a favorable attitude towards the type of unbridled accumulation of wealth celebrated by right-wing pseudo-Christians. Because of all these Old Testament and New Testament injunctions, teachings, commandments, the original church, the Catholic Church, calls for a preferential option for the poor. Catholic social doctrine goes so far as to say that the resources of the earth and the output of man's work are meant to be shared equitably by all. Can you imagine that coming out of the mouth of a right winger? If that's what the teachings of Jesus mean, right wingers seem to be pretty far away from Jesus, don't they? To hear the conservative pseudo-Christians, the Messiah's real name must have been Jesus Adam Smith Christ. Could someone please tell me where Jesus extols the effectiveness, let alone the morality, of trickle-down economics, or the genius of the free market, or where Jesus indicates even in the slightest way that the Matthew 25 suffering least of these should not be helped? The average liberal, in his or her concern that the world's goods be distributed equitably, and that the suffering least of these be helped, and that the poor not be oppressed, and that a major goal of society is to make sure that the hungry are fed, and the naked clothed, and that the sick are ministered to. All that seems a lot closer to the words of Jesus, to the Old Testament, and church social doctrine, than does the blind, idol-level market worship of right-wing pseudo-Christians. In short, is not the prime commandment, do unto others as you would have others do unto you? Is that not the essence of liberalism's goal? And the exact opposite of the operating principle of the conservative golden calf, unregulated capitalism. I really just don't get it, frankly, how right-wingers can even say with a straight face that Jesus would be a conservative, a right-winger. Let's take Sean Hannity, for example. He often states that he's a devout Catholic. Someone, perhaps his priest, needs to ask him whether his copy of the Bible has Matthew 25's parable of the sheep and the goats torn out of it. Hannity doesn't seem to know about that. Perhaps Hannity's Bible doesn't have those pages torn out. Maybe Hannity has a special unabridged version of the Bible, which contains heretofore unknown modifications to Matthew 25. Modifications that change the rule that everyone else understands, that as you do it unto the least of these, the poor, the naked, the sick, and the hungry, is how you do it unto Jesus himself. Perhaps what we can call the Hannity exception clauses, perhaps they provide that the sick must be ministered to, quote, but only when such sick person is at a level of distress requiring emergency room care. Or that the stranger must be welcomed, quote, except when said stranger lacks proper immigration papers. Or the catch-all Hannity exception clause, quote, and all such requirements to minister to those in need shall not apply when the neediness of said individuals is the result of their choices in life, including their failure to secure a more advanced level of education. You know what's really telling? What is the worst insult that a right-winger can fling at a progressive person? What is Hannity's worst insult? To call someone a tax and spend liberal. This truly reveals the essence of the right-wing pseudo-Christians. I ask you, who is it liberals want to tax and spend on? Themselves? No! They want to expend their own money and the society's collective financial resources, allocated via a democratic process, to, in effect, implement, achieve, accomplish Matthew 25 goals. They want to spend it on the least of these. You can certainly criticize liberal programs or methods, but the tax and spend epithet really criticizes the goal itself. Because what do the right-wing pseudo-Christians offer instead? At best, barely half measures. But most often, they offer nada, zilch, nothing. The hungry, the naked, the sick, the thirsty, they just won't be ministered to. Jesus just won't be ministered to in Christian theology. That's what right-wing pseudo-Christians seem to want. In fact, they seem to want to accomplish the opposite of Matthew 25. They want to have more money for themselves and the richest among us. Their mantra, the Hannity mantra, is me, me, me. I want the money. I need a bigger house. I need a bigger car. The money is mine. Tax and spend liberals, huh? How about we call these right-wing pseudo-Christians deny and destroy, cut and kill conservatives? Deny and destroy health, dreams, lives. Cut funding for life and death programs, and surely people will die as a result. The answer to fraud and waste, if there is any, isn't to kill the program, abandon the goal and let the people die. The answer is to fix the program or do it another way. So in conclusion, I'll say that somehow I just don't think that if Jesus were around today, he'd be real comfortable hanging around with these guys, calling himself a right-winger. I just don't think so. For those of you who are interested in a more detailed exposition of this whole subject, if you want to see all the places in the Old Testament where the implementation of economic justice is mandated, check out my rightwingpseudochristians.com website. There's a link to it at the bottom of my podcast page.
To kind of catapult the propaganda. In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again. To kind of catapult the propaganda. Catapult the propaganda.
I'll tell you, as far as catapulting the propaganda, old George has nothing on Bill O'Reilly, who works at it 24/7. The subject of this segment is Bill O'Reilly and the nature of his television program, The Factor. Bill O'Reilly is 6'4", I believe. He's a big guy. He has a big, deep voice, and he browbeats his guests, and he bellows at them and generally bullies anyone that comes on the program. Like all bullies, he doesn't want to be seriously challenged. He wouldn't like that. Now listen to this clip. O'Reilly had just given his talking points. The subject doesn't even matter. It's the procedure, the process, the setup that I'm pointing out here. And then he has as his guest Newt Gingrich. And listen to their initial exchange.
That's the memo. Now for the top story tonight. Another view on this, as well as President Bush's Latin American trip. Joining us from Washington, Fox News analyst Newt Gingrich. So where am I going wrong, Mr. Speaker?
Well, unfortunately, Bill, I don't think you're going wrong anywhere. I think the...
You hear what Newt said?
No, unfortunately, Bill, I don't think you're going wrong anywhere.
That's right. Bill is completely 100% right. And that's another view, according to Bill. That must sound like music to Bill's ears.
Bill, I don't think you're going wrong anywhere.
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 That's some other viewpoint, O'Reilly announced. Another right-winger. He and Newt. Two peas in a pod. Yeah, sometimes one might be more extreme than the other on a given issue. But is that another viewpoint? Isn't that the same viewpoint? An echo chamber? Now, Newt Gingrich is a recurring guest. He'll always be on in solo segments. It's just him and O'Reilly. There's no one present to contradict their mutual love fest. Gingrich will usually be on for a double segment. You'll have two segments in a row of Gingrich and O'Reilly reinforcing each other's viewpoints. The way I look at it, one of the prime components of propaganda is a false consensus. You get the objects of the propaganda, your audience, to believe that, well, everyone agrees with this. It must be true. That's why O'Reilly always has these analysts that agree with him. I've been forcing myself to watch every episode of O'Reilly's television program, The Factor, for years now. It's a tough job, but someone's got to do it. And I can tell you, I cannot remember a single time when he had a double solo segment of a progressive. In other words, an analyst that was brought in who had a strong progressive viewpoint, and that analyst got to go one-on-one with O'Reilly for two segments in a row. In fact, I can barely remember any segments of a solo nature where there was a true progressive analyst that was brought in to go one-on-one with O'Reilly. Certainly no one as far to the left as Gingrich is to the right, or indeed as O'Reilly is to the right. This is especially true in the last year or so, where O'Reilly's program has seriously taken on all the attributes of a Potemkin village. For all you right-wingers who don't know what a Potemkin village is and wouldn't recognize one if it stared you in the face, apparently a Russian minister named Potemkin had elaborate fake villages set up to fool Catherine the Great when she was touring the Ukraine and the Crimea. According to Wikipedia, this story is itself perhaps apocryphal. But in any event, the term has come to mean what it means. According to the American Heritage Dictionary, quote, something that appears elaborate and impressive, but in actual fact lacks substance, end quote. O'Reilly has a Potemkin Village of a Debate political analysis program where it's a whole elaborate setup, but there's far too often really no difference of opinion expressed. But O'Reilly wants you to think there is. O'Reilly has set up an elaborate fake structure so that people will come away with the impression that they watched the debate and heard both sides when they're really only hearing one side. Again, not all the time, but most of the time. Especially when O'Reilly has his recurring analysts of various sort come on over and over again. Besides these analysts that are granted solo segments, even with O'Reilly's guests, he makes sure that they can't challenge him either. The progressives, or so-called progressives that he has on, are actually usually DLC types, Democratic Leadership Council types. They're essentially moderate Republicans. Rockefeller Republicans, we used to call them when I was a kid. Besides their centrist views, which are nowhere as near to the left as O'Reilly and his right-wing guests are to the right, these people are usually shy retiring people, wimpy, poor debaters. And in addition to having weak politics and weak debating skills, they're apparently desperate to keep appearing on the program, and they therefore kowtow to Bill and never aggressively challenge any of his right-wing insanity. Sure, I remember Bill once had a one-on-one debate with Michael Moore, and once he had New York Times columnist Paul Krugman on. Krugman was actually sharing the segment, I believe, with another guest. But other than those two, and whatever ones I may have forgotten that you could almost certainly count on the fingers of one hand, O'Reilly, like all true bullies who don't want to be effectively challenged, make sure that he never is effectively challenged on his own program. A really good example that I could close with that illustrates the cowardly nature of O'Reilly, the refusal to be challenged nature of O'Reilly, the hypocritical nature of O'Reilly, is his relationship with MediaMatters.org, MediaMatters.org. This is a media watchdog group set up by David Brock. In case you don't know it, he's the far right-wing guy who saw the light and became a progressive. He's the one who, during the confirmation hearings for Clarence Thomas, described Anita Hill as a little bit nutty and a little bit slutty. He's that guy. Well, now he's on our side. What MediaMatters.org does is it tapes these guys, their TV programs, their radio programs. It tapes all these right-wingers and then just puts the clips on the internet. That way, people can hear for themselves what these right-wingers are saying and decide whether they're despicable liars or not. O'Reilly calls Media Matters a smear website, a smear organization. Now, I don't know how you can smear somebody by putting clips of what they say on the internet unless they're smearing themselves out of their own mouths. O'Reilly's been relentless in his attacks on Media Matters. So almost a year ago, David Brock wrote a letter challenging O'Reilly. It's somewhat lengthy, so I'm going to read just part of it. Dear Mr. O'Reilly, you have repeatedly and personally attacked me, Media Matters for America, and my fine staff, calling us vile, despicable, and weasels, and comparing us to the Ku Klux Klan, Castro, Mao, and the Nazis. You have refused my repeated requests to appear on your broadcast. You once offered your viewers your definition of the word coward. On the January 5th, 2004 O'Reilly Factor, you declared, quote, If you attack someone publicly, as these men did to me, you have an obligation to face the person you are smearing. If you don't, you are a coward. Close quote. Well, Mr. O'Reilly, you have attacked me publicly on numerous occasions, and you refuse to face me. You, sir, are a coward, by your own definition of the term. You are, quote, hiding under your desk, close quote, which is a term O'Reilly uses all the time to describe people, rather than allowing me on your program to discuss your insults. You are gutless, to borrow the phrase you used to describe people who would not appear on your program. While reasonable people can disagree about conclusions we have drawn about your comments, you are simply wrong to say that we took you out of context. I remain willing and eager to appear on either your television or radio program to discuss your contention that my organization has taken your comments out of context. Should you continue to refuse this offer, it is only reasonable that the American people will conclude that you are not only, as you would put it, a coward, but a hypocrite as well. That's the end of the letter. I think David Brock put it very well, don't you? O'Reilly's back must be starting to hurt him now, because he's been cramped under his desk, hiding from David Brock, for, just about 11 months now. So when you watch The Factor or listen to his radio program, every time you hear O'Reilly say that someone's a coward and is afraid to come on his program and is hiding under their desk, you'll know that O'Reilly is also talking about himself. All right, that will about wrap it up for today. If you liked what you heard, please tell your friends about the podcast. If they don't know about podcasting, turn them on to it. The music that opened the podcast was L.A. Nightmare by 22 Caliber. They're at music.podshow.com. Then we heard a bit of Catapult the Propaganda by Nise Music, nisemusic.com. We'll close the podcast with Taking My Country Back by Honky Tonkers for Truth. There is no website for that one. My music resources page has all this information. It's linked to from my podcast homepage. I'd love to hear what you have to say, so feel free to email me at rational@adelphia.net. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
Now you don't know my name, but you know who I am. I'm your everyday work hard, play hard, raise kids and pray hard, common man. And Lord knows I love this land. That's why I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you. Don't like how you've been treating me.